David, let's get right to that breaking news. It seems that Hosni Mubarak has been sentenced to life, according to the latest ruling coming out of Egypt. Give me the details.
Well, yes, indeed. They found him guilty of being responsible for the deaths of some 850 protesters during the what they call the Arab Spring uprising there in February last year, what I label the Islamic uprising, because, of course, as I've mentioned several times, it's leading to Islamic rule in Egypt and elsewhere around the region. And immediately after the sentence was announced, he collapsed and was rushed to a prison hospital. So he is in poor shape. His son was also convicted, two of his sons and some other former officials of his regime. And, you know, there's a mixture of feelings, I can tell you, Jimmy, on the streets of Cairo. The international media is reporting it as jubilation from the Egyptian people. But those who supported the candidate that was his last prime minister in the presidential election a couple weeks ago will not be so jubilant, because they fear this will only strengthen the hand of the Muslim Brotherhood movement. Their candidate, Mursi, came out on top just barely, but is projected to probably win the next round of elections. And this indictment of the former leader of Egypt will only strengthen the Muslim Brotherhood hand. And we had in Israel this week press reports of a website of the Muslim Brotherhood that posted a notice on Al-Nakba Day, that's the middle of May, calling for Israel's complete destruction. This is the head of the Muslim Brotherhood movement saying, "We've worked for years for the elimination of the Zionist regime in Palestine, for its replacement by an Islamic government." So the Israelis will not be thrilled to see this verdict today of who was an autocrat, definitely not a Democrat, but was a friend of Israel in one sense, or at least kept the peace with Israel going, was a friend of the United States and the Egyptian military, closely linked with Mubarak and backed by the U.S. government, will not be very thrilled with this verdict at all. Although he could have gotten a death sentence, that was considered the most extreme sentence he could have gotten. But life in prison, of course, a man in his 80s, this is not a long sentence in one sense, but it means he will remain behind bars for the rest of his life. And that is the thing that is being celebrated by some and condemned by some in Egypt today.
So you look at this as if it may be some help, in fact, a real boost for the Muslim Brotherhood candidate Mursi there, who will be up in that runoff election June 16 and 17. It looks like the Muslim Brotherhood has the inside track to become also president, along with controlling the parliament there of Egypt.
Well, that's what the analysts have been saying here, Jimmy, that if Shafiq, the candidate who was the last prime minister in the Mubarak regime, although only for a few days, we have to point out, he was appointed at the very end of Mubarak's reign, but he was a military man for many years, so connected to the regime and to the military there. Had the sentence been considered too light, had he been pardoned or not gotten a very deep sentence, the fear was that the opponents of the Mubarak regime and of Shafiq and the supporters of the Muslim Brotherhood would have taken to the streets en masse. There would have been chaos, and this might have contributed to the Muslim Brotherhood victory. Had he been sentenced to death, the fear was that supporters of the Mubarak regime, and there are many, Jimmy, and I have to say most of the Coptic Christians in Egypt, 10% of the population, they amount to about 8 million people, they very much went out in favor of Shafiq and against the Muslim Brotherhood candidate. They fear Islamic Sharia law will be imposed. They fear that the persecution of their minority status will increase under a Muslim Brotherhood government. So if it had been a death sentence, then there would have been a counter-reaction. So this is considered somewhere in between, and maybe the Egyptian people will just accept it, and there'll be no immediate bloodshed or disturbances as a result of it. And so far, we have had no reports of that.
Well, we'll stay on this story and top of it with David Dolan there as he gives us our Middle East news update. And, of course, next week with the timing of the election for the Egyptian president, we're going to be, of course, covering that story very closely. David, back in Israel now, Ehud Barak, who is the Minister of Defense, put forth a proposal. I'm not sure if it was a trial balloon or what was going on, but he said that what must take place is the evacuation of Judea and Samaria. We're talking about almost 500,000 Jewish settlers out there, and in Judea and Samaria are sometimes referred to as the West Bank, that they would evacuate that, similar to what they did in the Gaza Strip. Was this a trial balloon? What in the world is Ehud Barak doing with this?
Well, Jimmy, it was a very vague statement, part of a speech that he gave on Wednesday at a strategic conference here in Jerusalem. Prime Minister Netanyahu also addressed the conference, spoke mainly about Iran, and other leaders here spoke. And basically he said that we may be forced to take unilateral actions because we do not have a Palestinian peace partner, and maybe for our own good, we'll need to take some actions. Now, he didn't say a complete withdrawal of the Israeli settlements, and the consensus here certainly in Israel is that the settlement blocks, Gush Katif and the settlements down around Hebron and Maale Adumim, east of Jerusalem, that these will remain in Israeli hands. So I don't think he was advocating that. He seemed to be saying some of the more isolated communities in outlying areas might need to be unilaterally evacuated in order to press this peace process forward. But if it was a trial balloon, it went down like a lead balloon, Jimmy, because the Israeli media this weekend was full of commentaries noting that Israel, under Ehud Barak, unilaterally withdrew from Lebanon, saying, that's it, we'll now have quiet from Lebanon. And that, of course, was followed a few years later by the massive Hezbollah attack upon northern Israel in 2006, that withdrawal earlier coming in 2000, and then, of course, Ariel Sharon's unilateral withdrawal from the Gaza Strip in 2005. That supposedly was going to bring us quiet. The Palestinians would be satisfied with that, and, of course, we all know it was the opposite. Hamas took over, the rockets increased, and under Ehud Olmert, another Kadima leader after Sharon, the army was forced to go back in to the Gaza Strip in a war in late 2008. So there's not a lot of enthusiasm for this trial balloon, if that's what it was, or you know, anybody and many people in Israel thinking this is a workable solution to the problems. It seems like he was just trying to stir up the pot a bit and say that we've got to take some sort of action here. But again, he represents a party with 5 Knesset members out of the 96 coalition members. The opinion polls show that his party would not even re-enter the Knesset had elections been held this September, as Prime Minister Netanyahu was threatening, as it were, to advance them to. So I don't think it's going to gain a great deal of attention in terms of being a possible reality for the policymakers here in the country.
We'll have a conversation right after this one with David Dolan, with David Wilder. He is in the United States, but he's the spokesperson for the community of Hebron, which David was just talking about. And then Winky Madad lives up in Shiloh. We'll talk to him about this as well, see what these Jewish settlers may be reacting as they have heard this comment by the Minister of Defense. David, how about a minute's worth, if you will? You talked about Iran, and the Prime Minister, when he spoke at this conference, focusing on Iran, there is a editorial out in the Jerusalem Post entitled, "In Obama We Trust." And it basically is talking about, do the Israeli officials have enough trust in President Obama to deal with Iran, or they need to move ahead on their own?
Well, that is the question here, and all the experts are saying that if and when Israel concludes that the Obama administration will not take military action if Iran continues to pursue this uranium enrichment program, does not scale it back, then Israel will take its own action because, again, it just doesn't have the trust that the West will do so. But Netanyahu spoke very firmly. He said not only does Iran need to stop enriching up to 20%, which they've been doing the last few months, but they must stop all enrichment. They must hand over to international inspectors all uranium supplies that have already been enriched, and they must let international inspectors into these underground facilities and these other facilities they have so that they can be shut down. So he basically said, our position is shutting down the Iranian nuclear production program. If that doesn't happen, then other action will be taken. that's a new red line in the sand, basically, that he drew, maybe because of his new political power here in the land. He's speaking that strongly, but I'm sure the Obama administration and other world leaders are taking note of that.
David Dolan, our man in the Middle East, he covers it for us. David, thank you so very much, my friend.
You're welcome, Jenny.